British Sky Broadcasting presents Death Sentence, voiced by Phil Moyes. On behalf of MCS Agency. A 20th Century Fox and Hyde Park Entertainment presentation. With Kevin Bacon, Garrett Hedlund, Kelly Preston, Aisha Tyler, and John Goodman. Now a home movie with a family of four. Mother, father, and two young sons.
Okay, guys, ready? We wish you a Merry Christmas. Yeah, you like it? Is that the one? Good, good. Merry Christmas.
Oh, the new hockey stick.
Is it a good size?
Yeah, it looks fine to me.
Let me see that slap shot. Wait, don't knock anything on the table.
I am the greatest.
Now Dad and the eldest son are in the yard.
Show me what you got. Oh, hang on one sec.
They're hitting an ice hockey puck with the new hockey stick.
Ready?
All right, flip it up.
The younger son rides a new bike.
Oh, you okay?
Okay, you're on your own.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Luke. Oh, honey.
Whoa. Well,
what's now Luke is inside painting at an easel.
How proud are you of him?
Oh, my God, he's amazing. Did Mommy do that? Tell me the truth. Did Mom do that painting for you? Hey.
The eldest son is at the easel. That.
Just got one question. What the heck is it?
It is abstract.
So when I get signed, I'll buy you a new house, okay?
Hey, what's wrong with this house?
Now outside with the hockey stick.
Oh, shit.
Okay, make a wish.
So how old are you, Mom?
we're just wondering.
You look gorgeous. You don't look a day over...
The eldest son holds a trophy.
Brandon Hume, you've just won MVP.
Our golden boy.
Jerry, after
you
do this,
we'll
make you go.
Number one.
Get this baby.
Now a birthday cake.
No, please.
He's gonna kill us.
Surprise!
Happy birthday, Lukey!
Happy birthday, Luke!
Yeah. 14. It feels no different than yesterday when I was 13.
Do you want your 14 punches now, or...?
A little later, after I wake up.
Get off me! Oh, man. No, I almost said it.
Should all acquaintance be forgot and ended?
From the family celebrating another Christmas to an office Christmas party, where the father celebrates with colleagues. An overhead sign bears a company logo, Starfish Capital Partners. The home movie finishes, and in the present day, from under the same sign within the same office, a smiling man walks through the large, bright, modern, open-plan space. Another man leaves his workstation and heads for a spacious, glass-walled office at the end of the room, where the father, from the home movie, sits at a desk. A glass door is open. The man knocks.
Can I bother you?
You know, just when you think there's no order anywhere, there's order looking right at you.
Okay.
What do you need here?
Andy just said I need you to prove this. This guy worked here at Starfish for 6 years, but his wife's dead, no kids, no will. I just want to roll his pension back up into the fund and make it easy.
The father hands back the file.
Come on, don't make me file with the state.
We file with the state so that one day if somebody looks back at this guy's death, he will see that we did our job.
You're right, we gotta cover our asses. I got it, sorry.
No, we do our job and we do right by a guy who worked for us. Lest he die in vain.
What's that order in the universe thing?
Well, yeah, our insurer spent $300,000 on this new model, new field data, new society. Who is the ideal employee? Who dies how and when? And they sent it over to show what a great job they're doing. And you know what it says? It says that people with kids live longer than people with no kids. People with two live longer than people with one. Smoking is bad, speeding is bad, deaths in the family are bad, divorce is bad. It's just kind of nice to see that all that junk is still true. Yeah.
And hey, you're the one with the perfect kids.
Brendan, you're such a kiss ass.
Mm-hmm. Hey.
God gave me the skills. I can't help it.
God, Mom, I need to go kill myself.
Of course you do, Lippy.
May I be excused?
No.
I've got a cretin for a brother.
I've got a no-dick for a brother.
Okay, you stop right now. You should know better.
What?
Let's be a family, shall we?
Can I say no?
No.
I demand emancipation. I want a lawyer. Okay, I'm filing right.
I'm home.
Hey.
Sorry I'm late. Did I miss dinner?
No, there's plenty. I'll heat something up for you.
Hey, Dad, I need to ride to the city on Saturday.
Mm. The city?
Yeah, it's an exchange game. And, first line again.
No kidding. That's fantastic. Yeah. Waldron must love you.
Yeah, because he's a kiss-ass.
Well, good for him. We all going?
Nah, Lukey's got soccer.
Yeah, but I'm not starting, so you can just...
Maybe you should just kiss some more ass.
Or just not suck so bad. No, I heard that could
actually... Hey. Huh?
Dad, he's just kidding, okay? He's just being an idiot.
Don't call him an idiot. Lucas, you have a loyal and loving brother.
I agree.
A loyal, loving kiss-ass.
Can we just all please be civilized for once before I kill somebody?
Whatever, Weasel.
Whatever, Weasel.
They stand.
Luke. Plate.
Luke hands his plate to his mother and leaves the kitchen with Brendan.
Come here. Come on.
See what you miss when you don't come home?
Yeah, well, at least they're not throwing food.
Now to an ice hockey match. With his father watching from a crowded stand, Brendan powers towards goal and shoots. The puck hits the back of the net.
Played a heck of a game, kid. I'm proud of you. Heck of a game.
Thank you.
Love the way you're handling the puck.
They're driving, presumably homeward bound.
So, some of the guys have been talking about maybe going to college in Canada.
Canada? Canada is far.
Still have Luke?
No, there isn't comfort. Oh, no, come on, I'm kidding. You get the kid about your kids or you lose your mind, listen. Look, you had a great game. You've had several great games, but professional hockey, is that what we're talking about here, Brian?
I mean, maybe. I don't know.
It's a risky business.
And this is coming from your extensive professional sports background?
No, my extensive risk assessment background. Thank you very much. Risks, liabilities, the stuff of life, son.
No, it's the stuff of your life, Dad, your thrilling life.
Hey, don't make fun of your father, bum. I'm the only one you get.
On another stretch of nighttime urban road, two Ford Mustangs are prowling without lights, one tailgating the other.
I guess we can talk to Coach Waldron, get research schools in Canada, and find somebody who could educate us on hockey versus law
Dad,
school.
Dad,
what?
Educate us? Look, I just want to play some hockey.
An oncoming car is headed towards them.
Hey, lights.
He flashes his headlights at the oncoming car, which turns out to be the two Mustangs.
Dad, so what do you say?
I said we could look into it. All right.
Okay.
At least don't tell your mother.
I would never.
The Mustangs have clearly turned, caught them up, and now threateningly pull in front of them, then scratch off. The Mustangs hang a right off the main drag.
Where the heck is the darn expressway? Oh, great.
A dashboard warning light reads fuel level low. He pulls into a gas station. A sign on the forecourt pump reads out of order. He drives to another pump at the side of the forecourt building. He gets out of the car and goes to the pump.
Hey, where do you think you're going?
I need my fluids, Dad.
Oh, yeah. The obligatory slushy stop.
They have them in there, right?
That or something worse for you. Do you have money?
Yeah.
Okay, well, quick in and out, because we got to get home.
All right.
Brendan enters the forecourt shop and can be seen through a side window over his father's shoulder, getting a drink from a dispenser.
Hey, honey, it's me. I just wanted to let you know that our son is going to Canada to play hockey, and we didn't want any kind of long, drawn-out goodbye, so I dropped him off at the airport. He says he'll call, but of course, we may never see our son again. But as long as he's happy, right? Okay. I love you, and we'll be home soon.
He puts his cell phone away and looks uneasily around him at the less-than-salubrious surroundings. Shadowy figures loiter next to burning braziers. Across the street, a shambling individual pushes a supermarket trolley. Behind him, unseen and unheard, two Mustangs glide to a halt. Five men wearing balaclavas and carrying weapons get out and burst into the shop.
Get the fuck down or I'll blow your fucking head off! Get the fuck down! Yo, this is your man! This is your man!
Go for a cat, Billy!
cashier is shot. Brendan, terrified, faces the gunman. Outside, his father runs towards the shop, but is knocked down by an off-roader making a dash for it.
Get your gun! Do this, or you're not one of us! Do it!
Hey, you can do this.
The younger of the Hoods is being encouraged to deal with it, Brendan. He slashes at Brendan with a machete.
That's my boy.
Brendan sinks to his knees. His father races to him as the Hoods escape. Except for the dude who maimed Brendan. Brendan's dad floors him with a rugby tackle outside the shop. They roll over and over on the ground until Brendan's dad pulls off the dude's balaclava. They stare at each other. The dude kicks him in the leg and runs out into the middle of the road, remonstrating at his mates in the Mustangs who have left him behind.
Fuck you! Motherfucker!
A passing car has hit him.
Brendan! Brendan!
Brendan lies on the floor, clutching his bleeding throat, gasping for breath.
Help! Help me! Somebody help me!
His father, on his knees, cradles him in his arms.
Help!
On the open road, one Mustang pulls alongside the other. Their lights are on now. The Hoods take off their balaclavas.
Where's Joe?
He's a man now! He can take the subway!
Get some help! Can somebody help us, please? Please!
Doctor!
He's burning. He was cut. Somebody cut him.
Get an airway open. Create an airway. Get an airway.
He's my son.
That's my son.
Okay, get him. Get him. We're in the hospital now.
Sir,
okay,
sir,
we're
gonna
help you out,
back
okay?
Back
get him. We're gonna take care of you.
We'll get
you fixed up now.
Sir,
okay?
I'm sorry. You need to stay back.
What?
Here.
I can't. Why
no,
can't? Why can't?
The doctors need to do their job, sir.
I know, but I can't go in there.
Sorry.
Okay, well, he'll be okay, right? It's my son. His name's Brendan.
Brendan's mum and brother, Lucas, run from a hospital elevator to the reception area. She spots Brendan's dad, runs to him, hugs him. A man in scrubs approaches, gravely shakes his head. Luke is distraught. His mum sinks to her knees, hysterical, comforted by his father. Six young men line up for an identity parade. Each holds a card in front of him with a number from 1 to 6. Brendan's dad, flanked by a white male police officer and a black female, stands behind one-way glass staring at the lineup.
5. Number 5.
That's Joe Darley.
He's a kid.
He's a runt, almost 23. And he's an animal.
In heavy rain, Brendan's family and other mourners somberly watch a coffin bedecked with flowers mechanically, slowly sink into a grave. Brendan's dad, still suited, sits on his bed at home.
I'm supposed to have some kind of a pre-trial hearing tomorrow. They want me to go and make a statement.
His wife, in a nightdress, slowly crosses to a wardrobe.
You want to go with me?
Lucas stands supportively, quietly, at the open bedroom door.
You go. Put that animal in jail.
That's what the cops call them. Animal.
You gonna take that off?
He stands and takes off his jacket. Lucas looks at his parents, turns and retreats to his own room, where he flops onto his bed. Now his dad, changed into pajamas, joins his wife in bed, lying side by side on their backs.
school said they wanted to do a memorial at the next game. The team wanted to do something.
It's nice of them.
She breaks down and reaches for his hand. They clasp hands, fingers entwined, tightly.
He would have been playing.
He holds her in his arms. Lucas, restless, creeps down the passage to Brendan's room. His dad hears the door squeak and stir. Lucas puts on Brendan's light. He picks up a framed photo of him with Brendan, arms round each other, beaming, proudly showing off trophies. He breaks down. His dad, propped up in bed on his elbows, listen, concerned, heartbroken.
Today's easy. I need you to sit there, put the fear of God in this guy. If the judge asks you, you tell him what you told us and identify Darlene in court. Okay? The minute I get your statement in, with you sitting right there, the public defender's gonna wet his pants and fold. I'll make a deal in 5 minutes, get this guy in jail today. Easy peasy.
Deal? Wait. Hang on, what do you mean? What deal? I want this guy to go away for the rest of his life.
No, I can get you 3 to 5 guaranteed. That's a very decent result. I'm talking guaranteed time. Not maybe, not the jury didn't feel up to it. That's worth more than chasing some make-believe 10 to life and the guy walks free. You want that?
He killed my son.
Mr. Hume, I've got one eyewitness, you. That's nice. But do you know how many cases with one witness I don't even bother to try for a deal on? The machete magically disappeared. The only blood we could find on that weasel was his own from when the car clipped him. And you picked the only gas station in America without a working surveillance camera. We've just got your word. That's not bad if I can scare the guy into a deal.
You're using my son's death like some kind of card trick.
Look, I get a banger off the street. A year or so, somebody does my job for me. He doesn't get out of there alive. Fine with me. He finds Jesus. Fine with me. But we get religion and go to trial as much as I'd love to, and the defense starts working on when was your last eye exam and what do you have against inner city youth and how unfair it is for them to grow up so violent, how they're forced into initiation killings or face execution themselves. You want a jury feeling sorry for this fucker, huh? You want them to want?
Wait, you said initiation killing. I thought this was a robbery.
It only looked like one. It was an initiation. You kill someone at random to get made in a gang. It's the price of admission.
Are you saying that Brendan was killed so that some asshole could feel more like a man? So that he could be in some club?
This is a take it or leave it thing, sorry to say. Your Honor, I'd like to enter the statement of a witness present at the time of the attack. Father of the victim.
We can enter that at trial, can we not, Mr. Baring?
I believe, Your Honor, if we enter it today, defense will change their plea to guilty. Save the people the time and expense of a trial.
That's the statement.
Joe Darley, the accused, sits just feet from Brendan Hume's father, Nick Hume. With his fingers, Darley mimes shooting him.
Mr. Hume. You're giving evidence that Mr. Darley here, before your eyes, attacked your son and caused his death?
He stands.
You're saying you'll testify to that in a trial?
No, Your Honor, I am not. What? It was dark. There were a lot of them. I can't be sure anymore.
Mr. Baring. Do you expect to obtain evidence other than Mr. Hume's here?
No, Your Honor, I do not.
Darley winks at Hume.
I'm dismissing this case. Mr. Darley, you are released from custody. You may return with a bailiff to the holding cells to retrieve your personal effects.
Nick Hume grabs his briefcase and walks purposefully from the courtroom. Outside the courthouse, Joe Darley emerges and lights a cigarette. He descends the steps to the sunlit road below, where two Ford Mustangs pull into parking bays. Darley, wearing a smug grin, is greeted by his fellow gang members. From across the street, Nick Hume watches impassively from his own parked car. As a ninth dude, tall, commanding, shaven-headed, emerges from the lead Mustang. He draws on a cigarette and pulls the collar of his long leather coat over his heavily tattooed neck. He takes Darley to one side.
I'm pretty fucking good. I'm proud of you. Who's a man now?
Get in the car.
Darley, still bearing the scars from being flipped by the passing car at his initiation, looks made up. Mustangs do a U-turn and scratch off down the street, followed at a discreet distance by Nick Hume. The further they drive, the more the neighborhoods acquire a harder edge, and the more stares Hume gets in his swish, freshly minted Ford family saloon. Eventually, they sweep into a large, fenced-off, run-down urban estate. The Mustangs pull up beside a large, low-slung, three-story apartment building. There's an air of neglect and squalor about the place. Under a covered walkway next to an overflowing garbage bin, a dark-haired girl nonchalantly props herself against a metal post, as if they're expected. Darley and the leather-coated dude get out as Hume watches from a safe distance.
Had a nice, fun time with this one here, was it?
Okay. He stuffs some notes in his pocket, as in, the treat's on me.
Proud of you.
Darley makes his acquaintance with the girl. They disappear into the building. The others leave them to it. Hume, expressionless, watches them depart. Now he enters a wooden tool shed. It's nighttime. He knows where to find wire cutters, which he discards, and instead takes a machete from the wall. He switches on an overhead light and looks thoughtfully at the machete, but flings it onto a workbench in front of him. He goes to another work area, picks up a tool, discards it. He opens a cupboard, takes a toolbox from on top of the cupboard and examines various tools.
Dad?
Nick swings round. Lucas stands in the half-open shed door.
Hey.
What are you doing?
Nothing.
Nick has stumbled on an old hunting knife. Lucas puts down the artist brushes he arrived with and picks up the machete from the workbench.
What are you doing? Don't play with that. Put it down.
Nick wraps a cloth around the knife.
So, it was like a gas station. Where Bryn got killed.
Yeah, it was a gas station. Why do you want to know?
I wondered where he died.
Yeah. It was, a stop spot in Roxanne.
Do you think he was scared?
Yeah, Luke. I didn't. I think he was scared.
He secretly pockets the knife as his wife Helen arrived.
How did it go?
They let him go.
They did what? Why?
I don't think it was him.
Well, you said it was him. You said they had him. Are they going to keep looking?
Yeah, they said they would.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm sorry. What do you want me to do? I'm sorry. I left some at the office. I gotta go back.
Now? Nick!
I'll be home as soon as I can.
He leaves. She walks after him. Lucas looks round the shed. Nick sits in his car, breathing heavily.
Oh, God, what am I doing?
Just as he starts the car, apparently to leave, a shadowy figure emerges down some steps onto the covered walkway of the dimly lit building he has been watching. He dumps two black plastic bags on the floor and lights a cigarette. From a distance in the half-light, it seems to be Joe Darley. He picks up the bags and disappears through another door. Nick deliberates, then opens the door and gets out. He walks towards the building. A blonde carrying grocery bags exits the building. He turns away. She gives him a cursory look and continues on her way. A brief pause, and Nick heads for the building again. Inside, in a room bathed in an eerie red light, Darley is disposing of his garbage into a huge trash bin. One of the bags splits. He stoops to brush off his trousers and involuntarily turns towards the door.
Jesus! Fuck, man. Fucking scared the shit. Wait a minute. You fucking kidding me? You?
Nick seems repulsed at the sight of Darley. He lunges at him. He has Darley pinned against a wall. Darley, with a massive effort, heaves Nick off him. They stumble backwards, crashing through a wall opposite. In the melee, Nick's hunting knife drops from his pocket and rolls loose on the floor. Darley grabs it. They roll over and over on the floor. Nick gets on top and pins Darley down. As if possessed, he punches him, repeatedly, viciously. Something's happened. Nick recoils. Darley's fretting, raises his head, sees the knife buried deep in his chest.
Oh, God.
Nick looks stupefied, transfixed. Darley feebly attempts to grasp the knife's handle, but hasn't the strength. His life force is ebbing away, is spent. He's gone. Nick comes to his senses. He inches forwards. He takes hold of the knife's handle and yanks the blade from Darley's chest. He recoils again from the blood on the blade, and as the gravity of his deed hits home, clutching the knife, he staggers from the room. He stops his car on a bridge over a culvert. He looks at a knife wound on the palm of his left hand. He's panicking. He picks up the hunting knife from the passenger seat beside him. He furtively looks round in case he's being watched and vigorously scrubs the knife's handle with the cloth he had originally wrapped it in. He gets out of the car and drops the knife into the culvert below. He looks round, dashes back to the car, and beats a hasty retreat. Helen and Lucas are going through a collection of video cassettes and DVDs.
I've been meaning to do this for months. It's very grown up of you to help.
I guess.
Hey. What happened?
Slipped in the driveway.
Honey, oh my God, look at you. You're a mess.
It's okay. I cut my hands.
You all right?
I'm good. Fine. Yeah, it's okay.
No, it's not okay.
I'm gonna take a shower.
Okay, well, I'm gonna get bandages. I'll bring them up.
Nick takes a long, lingering look at Lucas.
How you doing, kid? You okay?
I'm okay, I guess.
Good. That's good. Take a shower.
Lucas watches his father leave, then sits on the drawing room floor with his back against the sofa and looks at the Who movie running on the TV. Nick stands under a hot shower, steam rising from his shoulders as water cascades from his face into his cupped left hand. He clenches his fist and winces, from the pain of the knife wound or from the pain of knowing what he's done. He breaks down, crumpling into a heap in the shower well, and sobs. Helen enters the bathroom and runs to him and turns off the shower.
Oh, God. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
Kneeling beside the shower, she holds him close. A black Ford Mustang skids to a halt outside the closed iron gates of a car repair yard. The leather-coated dude, cigarette in mouth, gets out and opens a gate, slinging a satchel over his shoulder. A pit bull, tethered, affords him a warm welcome to the yard. A sign above the porticoed entrance to a decrepit single-story building reads, Bones Body Shop. Inside, a man uses an oxyacetylene torch. The dude walks with a showy hard man swagger to a spacious office at the back of the workshop. A beam of daylight floods in through an extractor fan, bathing a double pedestal desk in a bright white light. An array of guns, gun paraphernalia, cartridges and bullets litters the desk. The dude throws his satchel onto the desk. Bones appears.
Watch the fucking pieces!
Huge, unshaven.
For Christ's sake, they're worth something, unlike you. Where you been, Nancy?
Bones empties a few dollar bills from the satchel onto the desk.
The fuck you call that?
That's our knife.
When I take pity on you and your faggot half-wit friends, give you a couple of corners to run, you better deliver for me, or I'll know you've been stealing, and I'll kill you. You be the Prince of Payan, you fucking lightbag me, I'll fucking kill you. Lord knows I've been patient.
He flings the empty satchel at the dude, sits at his desk and takes off his glasses.
Yes.
And puts on another pair.
You can get the fuck out of my sight now.
He gets on with some work. The dude appears to sulk, momentarily, then turns on his heels and stalks out. Bones looks up from his work.
Fucking half-wit.
The black Mustang sweeps across the leaf-strewn drive of a substantial old manorial building. The dude joins his gang who surround a workbench in a cavernous room rigged up for some sort of chemical process.
What? What? Somebody fucking tell me what the fuck is going on?
The sole black member of the gang comes forward.
You here? Joe, dude. Somebody stuck him. He's dead.
What? You're lying.
He's gone.
He angrily flings the satchel aside as he leaves. Meanwhile, Nick Hume is chomping on a sandwich at his office desk.
Hey.
Nick's left hand is bandaged.
How you guys faring? You, getting through?
Yeah, we're okay. We find compensations. It's what we do, right? We compensate for our losses. Move on.
If anything like that ever happened to me, I don't know, I think I'd snap.
Well, you really don't know what you do until it happens. Surprise yourself.
Excuse me, Nick. Detective Wallace is here to see you.
Yeah, come on.
I'm sorry to break in on your day.
No, it's fine.
The guy we thought killed your son, somebody killed him.
Oh. Well, what was that? Some kind of a gang thing?
We think so.
Man, I guess there is justice, huh?
Yeah, I suppose there is.
I thought you'd like to know if he was the guy, I mean.
Yes, well, thanks for letting me know.
All right, I'll leave you to it then.
Detective Wallace leaves, apparently having clocked Nick's bandaged hand.
I guess I don't need to say anything, Nick, but you know, the company would pay for counseling if you guys wanted.
We'll manage. Thanks, Owen.
Nick is pensive.
Didn't deserve that. No way deserved that. He was a true fucking soldier. To Joe, he was a good fucking boy. A good fucking boy!
Yeah. The main man, standing over their table, intervenes.
So that's what we're gonna do? Why don't you show a little fucking respect, at least? See, that is why you guys are nothing. That is why you're a bunch of fucking punks, because you would rather drink up and toke yourselves fucking witless. Witless and scared shitless! My bad. Let's, here, cheers.
He picks up a schnapps glass from the table.
Get your fucking glasses up, all of you!
He doesn't drink. He violently flings the glass against a wall. The others drink the toast. Dar turns his back on them and scratches his shaved head. The black guy speaks.
Joe wasn't made for this shit, that's all. He wasn't like us.
No, wasn't like you. You mean he was not like you. He was better than you.
The black guy starts.
We as good as brothers since we was kids, and you fucking go this way. What, I'm not as good as you now? Joe was like blood to me, dawg. As good as fucking blood, you too.
Dar thinks about this and nods agreement. He sits at the table and seems to contemplate how he might express himself in a more reasoned way.
I would like to catch the motherfucker that did this.
Oh, we will. Ain't no motherfucking doubt.
Do the right fucking thing by Joe, yeah?
So who fucking did it?
It wasn't a cutty match, man. I wouldn't know about it.
Unless you were high.
A dude slaps a forearm.
It wasn't B Street, Billy. It wasn't the hall. It wasn't any of those assholes.
Yo, my sister said she saw some fucker in a suit down there. Just chilling.
Dar considers this.
How many fuckers in a suit you ever see a Stokely fucking home?
He goes to the bar.
See, here's a comical thing. When one of us gets killed, we don't make the paper. But the son of a senior VP of Starfish Capital? Whoa-wee.
He sits down again and holds up a newspaper with the headline, Greenbelt father and son attacked in Rockside, son slain.
Go talk to your sister.
The dude goes to the bar and shows the newspaper to a waitress, a blonde. He points at the paper, presumably specifically at a photo of Nick Hume that accompanies the report. She nods. Her brother and Dar exchange knowing looks. Nick Hume is deep in thought at his office. His PA knocks.
Hey, Amy, what's up?
I'm going home. You okay? You need anything?
No, I'm fine. I'm just gonna finish this risk analysis. Actually, could you drop this off with Owen, please, on your way out?
Sure.
Thank you. Good night.
She had given a discreet but concerned look at Nick's bandaged hand, which he had noticed, and he had tried to hide the hand from her. He sits at his desk and tries to wipe away fresh blood seeping through the bandage with A4 office paper. He looks round restlessly and seems to resolve to do something. He stands, puts some papers in his briefcase, dons his suit jacket, and leaves work. As he exits the high-rise building, he puts on an overcoat and joins the hustle and bustle of the downtown streets. In a drugstore, he purchases aspirin and other supplies. Back on the street, he changes the dressing and bandage on his hand, washes some tablets down with bottled water, and disposes of the remaining clutter into a cardboard box on the sidewalk. He sets off again, rubbing his eyes, preoccupied. He passes people sitting at al fresco tables and chairs. A man appears some distance behind and seems to be tailing him. From behind a tree trunk, Dar emerges, watchful, menacing, waiting. The man tailing him, it could well be the black guy from the gang, is drawing ever closer. He takes a handgun from under his coat. He runs towards Nick, who glances at the building to his left. The guy is almost on him. Nick glances left again. Suddenly, he swings his briefcase wildly behind him, knocking the gun from the guy's grasp, and swings again, knocking the guy to the ground. From across the street, Dar, brandishing a gun, and other gang members run towards them. Nick runs for his life. He bolts down a side alley. The entire gang has surfaced now and are in hot pursuit. They race down the alley after him.
Get in there! Come on! Come on! Get him!
The end of the alley, Nick hangs a right. He hurls his briefcase away, shedding ballast. He thrusts open a gate which takes him down a narrower alley, between brick buildings. He looks over his shoulder. The gang have reached the gate. The alley leads him to a tarmacked parking lot. He spins round, desperately looking for an escape. The gang seem to be getting closer. He spots a gate and makes a dash for it. It gives. He's through. He pumps his arms again. The gang have reached the gate. He races across another parking lot. Nick crashes into a pile of boxes and tears down yet another alley. He knocks over more boxes and stumbles. The gang can see him now. Dar takes aim at the gun. Suddenly, someone backs out of a door in front of him. He sends them flying. He gets to his feet and dives into the building. He runs along a passage just as the gang reach the door. He leaps down some steps and through another open door. He swiftly bolts it and heaves a catering storage unit in front of it.
Hey, which way is 1801?
He runs through a large professional kitchen.
Which way?
The gang bursts through the door. Nick opens another door at the end of the kitchen as the gang stampede in.
Where the fuck did he go?
Go, cut him off!
Kill him!
The gang splits and heads off in different directions. Nick darts through a subterranean labyrinth of passages and spaces, lined with row upon row of heavy-gauge industrial piping, boilers, control panels, pressure valves, wreaths of electric wiring, junction boxes and circuitry. Gang members are on his trail. Nick slams a door behind him. Dar leads his men through a series of rooms. Nick finds a stairwell. He bounds up several flights, goes through another door, up another flight, and runs along a corridor. He looks over his shoulder. He stumbled backwards into a multi-story car park and fallen over the hood of a parked car. He runs to the level above and, seemingly searching for inspiration, looks at the rows of parked vehicles. He skips to the sedan closest to him and throws his weight across the trunk, then quickly onto the next one to repeat the process. As he runs to the row opposite, he looks back for confirmation that he's successfully activated the security alarms. He jumps on two more vehicles with similar success, then climbs on the hood of a fifth vehicle and scrambles under a railing to the parking level above. He repeats the process on this level and climbs through a barrier to the next floor again. Meanwhile, several floors below, a young couple get out of their parked saloon.
Is it taco salad?
Yeah.
Get your willy ass and ass off there!
Ain't gonna make a fool out of me, motherfucker.
Dar reloads his weapon. Nick, looking exhausted, runs up a ramp to the level above him. At the far end, daylight floods in, reflecting a white glare in a trail of wet tire marks. An indication that he's reached the top of the building. He runs out into bright sunshine and pauses for breath. A door at the top of a stairwell bursts open. A mean-looking, gun-toting dude tumbles out. Nick ducks behind a car. The dude sports a large tattoo on one side of his shaved head, not unlike a giant crab's claw, framing his left eye. A motif reflected in his mate's tattoos and the motifs daubed across their Mustangs. He and Nick play cat and mouse between the cars. Nick climbs a barrier behind the dude and drops to the same level that the dude is on. As the dude moves along the row of cars, gun arm outstretched, checking the gap between each of the cars, Nick mimics his progress, crouched behind the vehicles, hugging the barrier, unseen. The dude pauses and looks in Nick's direction. Nick ducks. Just a few yards separate them now. Nick reaches into a pocket and pulls out his own car's remote and points it just behind the dude and zaps it. The dude spins round and takes a few forward steps. From behind him, Nick leaps out, runs at him, and with a shoulder barge knocks him to the ground. In the melee, the gun discharges into the air. Nick has knocked the gun from the dude's hand and sent it skidding along the floor. He pummels the dude's head on the ground, breaks away and opens the rear door of his car. He dives in and from the back seat picks up a club and whacks the dude about the head, face, body, limbs, until the club breaks. Nick moves to open the driver's door, but the dude grabs him and throws him against the adjacent car and then his own car. Nick propels him backwards with such force that the dude breaks the other car's window. Nick opens the door, forces the dude's head between the door and the door frame, and batters his head with the door. The dude falls to the ground and grabs his gun lying nearby. Nick dives into the other car as the dude empties the gun, aimlessly. He dives on top of Nick, on the front seat of the car. He grabs Nick by the throat. Nick, fighting for his breath, hits out, kicks out. The windscreen shatters. Accidentally, the column gear shift is dislodged and the car slowly rolls backwards. Nick and the dude, oblivious to the car's motion, continue their fight, seemingly to the death. The dude's hands are still tight around Nick's throat. With a desperate, heroic effort, Nick kicks out with his feet, completely pushing out the windscreen. It allows him to get on top of the dude. He wraps a seatbelt round the dude's neck. A shift in his eyeline gives him a view of a wing mirror. Horrified, he takes in the car's gathering momentum and that there's only a flimsy barrier between them and a sheer certain death drop to street level several stories below. He scrambles through the windscreen hole onto the hood, leaps into the air, and lands mere inches from the edge as the car plunges over the side of the building with the dude on board. Dar and two other gang members rush to a barrier on the floor beneath where the car had plunged from. They see the carnage below and cast their eyes to the floor above. Dar turns and runs. Above him, Nick gets to his feet and sprints like a bat out of hell towards his car. He gets in and makes a clean start. He races for the exit. At one end of the building, he makes a tight 180 and hangs a sharp right down an exit ramp. Just as three silhouetted, distant figures run round a corner at the other end of the building. They slow and give up the chase as Nick speeds from the car park onto the streets.
Billy, we gotta go. Billy, we gotta get the fuck out of here. Come on, let's go! Come on!
Go!
Nick slides his car around a corner onto a smart, deserted urban street and parks curbside. He looks in the rear mirror. He's bleeding from the mouth.
Oh, fuck. Oh, Jesus.
He seems to be desperately trying to gather his wits, to come to terms with the enormity and the import of what he has just experienced.
Hey, honey. I'm sorry I'm late. What? What do you mean you can't find him? Where the hell is he? Did you call his friends?
Oh, sheesh, honey.
Look, I gotta call you back. I think I know where he is.
Nick has recklessly scratched off and done a U-turn in front of traffic and hung a sharp right. An object is bagged as evidence.
All right. Get whatever prints you can from this stuff. Let me know. Look, I need you to start a canvas, all right? Pull people from the street if you have to. Someone had to see something.
Detective Wallace, with scenes of crime officers, is on the top floor of the car park. She walks to the temporary barrier now in place at the spot where the car had plunged from the building. She surveys the emergency response teams attending the devastation far below. Now Lucas Hume is looking through the shop window at the gas station where his brother was maimed.
Luke, what the hell are you doing? Your mother's worry sick. Now get in the car.
No.
I said get in the car.
No, I don't want to get in the... God!
Get up.
Luke falls to the ground.
Fuck you!
Lucas, this is not a safe place.
Yeah, I know that much, don't I? Would it have been better if it was me? Is that what it is?
He gets to his feet.
You guys could have handled that a lot easier than losing Brad the Golden Boy.
Luke, please get in the car. Come on. Luke, get in that goddamn car right now! Right now!
Luke goes to the car. His father puts a despairing hand to his forehead. Luke enters his kitchen at home. Nick, leaning against a kitchen cabinet, turns to his own thoughts. A red hue from painted windows suffuses the light in a derelict, vandalized church hall. Star sits on one of the remaining pews, examining the contents of a briefcase. Photos in a wallet of the Hume family suggest it's Nick's, discarded in the alleyways. The black dude enters.
You gonna do this?
Star looks to the intense red glow beneath a crucifix, silhouetted by a shaft of white light flanked by angels. Nick, stony-faced, eyes darting, drums his fingers on his desk at work. The black dude, hooded, carrying a parcel, enters the atrium of a swish modern high-rise building and heads for the elevators. A list of companies on the wall includes Starfish Capital Partners, Inc., 1500. He presses the up button. A security guard at reception looks up.
You need to sign in.
The dude ignores him.
Sir, you need to sign in. Message drop-off over there.
No, I need to hand-deliver this to Nicholas Hume.
You can sign in and drop it off like everyone else.
The dude remains where he is.
Hey!
He boards the elevator. The guard gives chase.
Hey! Hey!
But the doors close before he can reach him. On the 15th floor, the dude walks into Starfish.
Nicholas Hume!
Nick looks up from his desk. Three security guards run through the atrium.
Nicholas Hume!
He stalks the office, looking for takers.
Nicholas Hume!
Nick stands, looks at his PA. As security arrive, Nick faces the dude at his office door.
Nice office, motherfucker.
What the hell do you want?
He hands Nick the parcel.
That's the gift of freedom, baby.
Sir, should we escort this person out? Sir!
Free from wondering how you're gonna die now. You're free from wondering if you're gonna die alone, you hear?
Get him out of here.
You'll get your grace all over when you finally meet your maker.
Security lead the dude back through the office.
Come on, get off me!
Nick looks round, traumatized. His PA looks at him, incredulously. He looks at the parcel, and as if in a trance, puts it on his desk. He undoes the string and pulls away the loose brown wrapping paper. It appears to be his briefcase. Gingerly, he opens the lid. He lifts out his wallet. A photo falls loose. A family snapshot. The faces of Helen, Brendan, and Lucas have been scored through. He picks up the photo and slowly sits down. Distracted, he sees reflected in the glass wall opposite, there's something on the back of the photo. He flips it. It's a handwritten number, 555-0128. A warm red glow floods a narrow corridor, at the end of which a wall-mounted public telephone is ringing. A coarse, ringed hand appears. Dar draws on a cigarette.
Where are you, you bastard?
You want to send me a reward for finding that wallet of yours?
You tell me where the fuck you are right now!
No, I'll tell you where the fuck you are.
You're at my end of the fucking sewer, buddy. I say who lives. I say who dies.
Now you better get that through your fucking skull, because there's no more warnings.
I'm coming for some fucking family.
No.
You listen to me. You go near my family, and I will cut out your goddamn guts like I did your fucking friend.
You hear me?
He wasn't my friend. He was my brother.
And now I'm coming for the rest of your family.
You just bought them a death sentence, motherfucker.
Wait, wait. Don't!
Nick viciously slams the receiver back in place. Concerned heads appear above their workstations. He's feverishly searching for something on his desk. He finds it. Detective Wallace's calling card. Helen sits at home reading. A cell phone rings nearby. Nick leaves work, cell phone to ear.
Nick, what's going on?
He strides through the office. Helen picks up her phone.
Nick?
Honey, you okay? Is the conference cool?
Yes, we're fine.
All right, just stay there until somebody comes. Promise me.
Why? What's wrong?
Honey, just stay there till the police get there. I'm on my way.
He presses the down button for an elevator. And while he waits, copies a number into his cell phone. He looks around nervously.
Hey, can I have Detective Wallace, please? Detective Wallace, give me Detective Wallace right now.
He bolts to the stairwell.
Homicide, this is Wallace.
They fucking my family.
Mr. Hume?
Fucking trash! Threatened to kill my family!
All right, where is your family right now?
They're at home! They're both at home! Just help us, please.
Nick parks curbside in front of a police car in a leafy, sunlit road. Looking left and right, he runs up a paved path, bisecting a beautifully lawn front garden of a large, attractive, well-maintained two-story house. He opens the front door and goes in.
Helen! Look!
Nick?
He locks the front door and dashes from room to room, locking windows.
What the hell is happening? Honey, why are the police out front? Nick, you're scaring me. Talk to me.
Dad, what's going on?
He locks the kitchen door leading to the backyard.
Nick! What's going on?
He urges his family to stay put while he goes to the front door. He looks through a side window, unlocks the door, and opens it.
Thank God you're here.
He lets in Detective Wallace and closes the door.
Your son was a hockey player.
Yes.
The car will stay here tonight. Now, Mr. Hume, I think it's time you told me. Exactly who did what to whom? You make war on the wrong dog? That what you did? Thought you could just go kill some little asshole because you live all the way out here?
Helen is listening in the doorway.
What are you saying? What is she saying, Nick?
I've done nothing wrong.
Well, then why don't you tell me how you make Billy Darley this pissed off at you?
He stares at the detective.
You asked for my help.
He doesn't flinch. Helen looks on with disbelief, struck dumb.
All right. All right. Just try to get through tonight, Mr. Hume. And be grateful you're still alive. But if you started a war, God help you.
She leaves them. Helen, horrified, looks at Nick.
What have you done?
He runs after the detective.
How do I make it stop?
Did you start it?
He hangs his head.
Listen, I really don't care what happens to me. I just need them to be safe. Tell me how to stop this.
Well, first off, do everything they tell you. Everything. And don't worry, Mr. Hume. We've put out an APB on Billy and his gang.
She had indicated the squad car when she'd said, do everything they tell you. Now it's nighttime. Large trees cast shadows from the moonlight and from a garden light at the Humes' house. No house lights burn except in the front porch. Inside, Nick sits at the bottom of the stairs, casually dressed now, as Helen approaches, wearing a nightrobe.
I can't believe I didn't see what was going on with you. How could you do what you did? You thought you could balance the equation, put order in the universe.
I lost our boy. Your boy.
She kneels at his feet and tenderly cups his face with her hands.
You are a good father. And nothing that's happened changes that. And I love you. And I always will.
She kisses him. He holds back tears. She stands. He pulls her to him, holds her close. She runs her fingers through his tousled hair. He changes his grip. She prizes his hands from her hips and clasps them in front of her. Then, releasing herself from his grip, slowly heads up the stairs. Outside in the squad car, the driver opens his window and throws something out.
It's good that you're getting rid of it anyway.
Perhaps a cigarette butt. Helen is now asleep. Nick, at the bottom of the stairs, is beginning to nod off. He lifts his head with a start. Helen stirs. Nick is now wide awake. Brandishing a baseball bat, he goes to a front room window, with a view of the squad car, and pulls aside a net curtain. The policemen lie slumped in the car. One of them has blood squirting from his neck. A dude with a shotgun appears behind Nick, another in front of him. Nick batters him with the baseball bat and heads upstairs. He turns to fend off the other dude and scurries up the stairs again. The dude pursues him. Nick in the bathroom dives into the bath. The dude pulls the light on. Nick pulls the bath mat from under his feet. The dude goes flying. The second dude has climbed the stairs. He stands in the doorway and fires. Nick slams the door. He accidentally shoots the first dude in the knee. Nick rushes the gunman and they both crash through the landing banister. Nick and the dude lie on their backs on the floor below, dazed but alive. At the top of the stairs, another gang member manhandles Helen down the stairs, followed by a second dude with Lucas. Helen furiously lashes out at her captor. They slide down the last few steps. The captors throw them crashing to the floor in the drawing room. Dar and three other gang members encircle them, towering above them, mean and menacing. Nick stirs. Squirming, scared, witless, Helen looks despairingly across the floor to Nick. Dar looks at Nick, a look of pure malevolence.
No! No! No!
Lucas is shot.
No!
Helen is shot. Nick is shot. Dar looks at the three bodies at his feet, with apparent satisfaction and a fleeting suggestion of a sneer. Tonight I lack the strength to even move. One by one, almost respectfully, the gang members step over the bodies and file from the room.
But I know this is hard for you.
Lucas, Nick and Helen have fallen with their bodies fanned out in an arc, a semicircle, with their heads to the center at the pivotal point, almost touching. Nick, on his back, lies between his son and his wife. Suddenly, his mouth moves. He's in a hospital bed.
Doctor! Doctor!
It seems he's awoken from a coma and is in a confused state. Medics move to sedate him. He quietens down. He lies still, closes his eyes. A monitor flickers. There's a flicker too on Nick's face. He opens his eyes and looks to his right.
Can you turn that off?
The monitor or your heart? I'll ask the doctor.
The nurse leaves his hospital room. Detective Wallace, arms folded, leans against the doorframe.
This thing stops right now. God knows why you're still alive. But you're being given a second chance. You think that officer is out there protecting you? He's protecting you from yourself. He'll haul your ass right to jail if I say so. You want your retribution, and you kill a couple of punks, and it bought you what, huh? Everybody thinks they're right in a war. Everybody still died in the end. You were never gonna win this, Mr. Hume. Nobody is.
I killed them. I killed my family.
Well, your son's still alive.
What?
Barely.
Where is he? Is he here?
Where is he?
Wait, hey, come on. Wait a second now.
Luke! Lucas!
It's all right.
Lucas!
Let him go.
Sir,
where's
you,
my son?
You need to get back to bed.
Tell me where my son is.
He's in room 206.
Lukey? Luke, we're taking care of your son.
Doctor?
Luke?
Doctor, it's okay. Just let him through.
Nick looks through the open door of room 206. Lucas lies on a bed on his back. He's on a life support machine. His head is heavily bandaged. Nick steps into the room.
Is he gonna wake up?
I can't say right now.
Detective Wallace dismisses the doctor and takes a step forward.
It was never gonna balance.
What did you say?
The equation. Sometimes it's just chaos. That's all there is. I'd like a minute with him.
He half turns to look at her.
Please.
She relents with a shake of her head.
I'll be waiting.
She leaves, closing the door behind her. Nick sits on a bedside chair.
Hey, Lukey, can you hear me?
He holds Luke's hand.
Can you move your fingers? Son, just move your fingers if you can hear me.
There's no response.
Luke, I know that you think that I didn't care about you as much as your brother. God, well, maybe I didn't at first. You know, when your mom and I first had Brendan, he was so amazing to me, you know. He was like, he was like this miracle kid. And I always knew exactly what to expect with him. And then when you came along, I don't know, I kind of expected to have another Brendan, you know? I expected you to be just like him, but you weren't. I mean, you were so different. It's different than him, different than me. He's just so much more like your mom, you know, stubborn.
too much passion. Your mother, oh, she meant the world to me. And so do you. I just want you to know that I love you. I love you so much. I love your brother, I love your mother, I love our family. I'm so sorry that I wasn't a better father. I'm so sorry that I couldn't protect you guys.
He stands and stoops to kiss his son's bandaged forehead. He lifts his head, pulls himself up straight, stands tall with a look of resolve. He turns with cold, steely eyes, eyes it seems focused on revenge. In the corridor outside, Detective Wallace takes a cursory look through the door's viewing panel. She rushes in and checks the ensuite bathroom. A neck curtain billows in the breeze from an open window. She checks on Lucas. Almost imperceptibly, his head moves.
Get a doctor, right now. Doctor!
His fingers, too, now make small movements. Wearing a hospital gown, his forehead bandaged, Nick marches through driving rain like an automaton. He breaks through police tape at his front door. He enters his house and stands shivering, staring past more police tape into the drawing room. He dries himself in the kitchen with a towel. He removes the bandage from his head. With painful movements, he takes off the gown and dons dark outdoor clothing. He winds a fresh bandage round his head and squeezes a black baseball cap on top of it. He picks up wallet and cell phone from a kitchen counter and takes out the photo with the number on the back.
Hey, I need you to check a number for me. Yeah, 5550128. Well, check somewhere else. Just get it for me.
And the savings, too, huh?
Yeah, everything. All of it.
Pulling out the kid's college fund, huh?
Po-faced, Nick stuffs bundles of dollar bills into a bag. Now he gets into his car and puts the bag on the front passenger seat. He reaches for some tablets, presumably painkillers, swallows some and washes them down with liquid from a flask. He grimaces with pain, seemingly in his mouth, and then wipes his mouth with the back of a hand.
Hello.
Hey, Nick, it's Owen. Got that number on for you. It's a bar. It's called Four Roses. Nick, what's going on? Do you need me to call anyone?
Goodbye, Owen.
Nick.
Nick enters a long, narrow bar. It's where Darley's gang had met to toast Joe Darley after his demise. A couple of punters sat at the bar, giving the once-over. He goes to the end of the room and plonks his bag on the bar in front of an Hispanic-looking dude who is drying a beer mug.
I'm looking for Billy Darley or any of his friends.
No hablo pinche inglés, jefe. Lárgate de aquí, cabrón.
Nick takes a wad of notes from the bag and slams it on the bar. The barman uses his hands expressively. Subtitles read, I said I don't speak English, you son of a bitch. Got it now, boss? He looks at the two punters and points at Nick as if to say, who is this dude? Subtitles read, maybe if I chop off that piece of shit you call a head and send it to your mother, she'd recognize you, but I doubt it, boss.
Fuck you!
Nick grabs hold of the dude's head and smashes it on the bar. He whacks one of the punters for interfering.
You tell me where Billy Darley is. Tell me right now.
Right now!
You don't want Billy Darley, buddy!
I got business with him.
Okay, let me go. Let me go!
He releases him. The barman grabs all Nick's money.
This boy Heck goes crashing at 113, up the block.
He's usually hooking up around dinner time, you know? Okay? Ah, madre mía, cachete.
One more thing. I need to buy some guns.
A beam of daylight floods in through an extractor fan at Bones' body shop. Bones, unkempt, greasy, with a shock of black hair, is sitting at his double pedestal desk, counting dollar bills as Nick approaches.
Help you.
I need guns.
He looks up at Nick through the thick lenses of his horn-rimmed glasses. He takes these glasses off. He exchanges them for another pair and tries again.
I don't know you.
I came from the Four Roses.
He hauls his huge frame out of the chair.
I'm gonna guess you're a little bit far from home.
Nick throws down his bag. He opens it, revealing wads of greenbacks.
Well, don't let me smell fear on you. Fear is for the enemy. Fear and bullets.
He opens a safe, revealing a large display of weapons and a shed load of ammunition.
Lots of fucking bullets. You got the bastard of bastards. 357 for guaranteed head removal. That's a sweetie. You got your standard size 45, super size. That's a fucking hungry man right there. And you got the King of Mayhem. Half cannon, sword of justice. Take this fucker to the Holy Land, start your own crusade. Any one of these is bound to make you feel better about what's bothering you.
Nick picks up in turn the three handguns that have been placed in front of him and carefully examines each one. First, the King of Mayhem. Next, the Colt 45 semi-automatic. Bones looks on with professional interest. Now the Colt Python 357 Magnum. He raises the gun to eye level and, closing one eye, aligns the sights with an imaginary target.
What about that one?
This one?
From the safe, Bones picks out a breech-loading double-barreled shotgun, maybe a 12-bore, and throws it at Nick. He aims at an imaginary target again, getting a feel of it.
All right, I'll take this and these.
That's three fucking grand worth of killing. You got 3 grand worth of killing to do?
Nick opens his bag.
There's 5.
Well, that makes you a preferred customer. I'm gonna give you some accessories. Just because you got a thing about you. You have got a killing thing about you. You surely do.
Bones loads a canvas bag with the semi-automatic, the Magnum revolver, the shotgun, ammo and accessories. He hands the bag to Nick, who turns and without fanfare walks away. Bones picks up the King of Mayhem and the money from the desk. Nick stops in his tracks.
You the motherfucker after my son, Billy?
Nick turns to face him. Bones holds the King of Mayhem, cocked but pointing up in the air.
He's your son.
That'd make you the motherfucker killed Joe, that right? You killed my youngest. Now you're after Billy, yeah?
Yeah. I'm after him.
Bones nods and nervously fingers the trigger.
Well, Billy's no damn doing of mine. Anything he does, no damn doing of mine.
He puts the gun on the desk.
So, somebody needs to make somebody pay for something to make themselves feel better. Billy'd be the one to pay. Kill the little piss pants. See if it makes a damn day's difference to me. Dad to dad. Don't tell me about it. Just go do it. Lord knows I've been patient. And you're a cash fucking customer. But you think about asking me where Billy is. I'll kill you. Go your way now. Go with God. Bag full of guns.
Nick pulls the light switch in his shed and empties out the contents of Bones' bag. Using a handbook, he familiarizes himself with the Colt revolver. He fills the swing-out cylinder with 6 bullets. He aims at an imaginary target. Clumsily, he checks over the shotgun. Again, using a handbook, he gets to grips with the finer points of the magazine for the Colt 45. Now bare-chested, sitting in his shed, he gingerly eases off his head bandage and looks at his image in a large broken shard of mirror propped up inside an open first aid box. He fingers a long, thin row of stitches in a shaved area on his scalp. He picks up cordless clippers from the bench and starts to shear off the rest of his locks. Now painfully, he wraps a fresh strapping round his ribs. He has a stitched wound on his chest and 2 large dressings on his back, covering his shoulder blades. He shears off more of his hair. He cuts off the old dressing on his left hand and pours, presumably disinfectant, on the wound. He winces. He shears his head again. He fills the Colt 45 magazine with bullets. He inserts the magazine. He takes aim. He shears off more hair. He reloads the cylinder of the 357 and the Colt 45 magazine. He loads the shotgun. He takes aim with each of the weapons. He has a final flourish with the clippers and mimes firing with the shotgun. He dons a dark sweater. Using his teeth and right hand, he ties a colourful neckerchief round the wound on his left hand. From a box inscribed Brendan Stuff, he takes out a black leather jacket. He lovingly, lingeringly, smells it and puts it on. He picks up the handgun, the ammunition, the shotgun. A flashback to him bare-chested, shaven-headed, scarred, forlorn, contemplating his craven image in the mirror. He blinks. A cartridge is thumbed into a breached shotgun barrel. At the shed door, a last look back. But he seems to have reached the point of no return. He leaves the shed, resolute. He parks his car outside what appears to be a large 3-story tenement building. A few lights burn on each of the floors. Brandishing his shotgun, he looks around and walks to the entrance along a covered path. Inside, he sprints up a stairway lined with graffiti and emerges onto a wide, grimy, dimly lit corridor. He walks to the far end, checking door numbers as he goes. He stops outside an uninviting wooden door with the number 113 on it. He's about to knock, but changes his mind. He looks down at the shotgun he holds at the ready. A dude and his girl are chilling.
Gonna focus on the prey. The only...
Fuck! What the fuck? Who the fuck? You? We fucking killed you. The fuck?
He eyes his nearby weapon. Nick blasts it off the coffee table and shoves the Magnum in the dude's face.
Get the fuck out of here!
The girl legs it.
Where's Billy? Fuck you.
That's my tooth, you asshole!
Tell me where the fuck he is!
The office. The office. What the fuck is that?
It's the abandoned mental hospital. It's where we cook our shit, dude. It's by the bridge on Stygian Street. All right, Stygian Street.
Nick spies the dude's cell phone and throws it at him.
Call him.
Good thing your daddy got you some training wheels so you don't have to rollerblade over here for your fucking sister's heaven, huh? She's been a good customer of mine for a while. I've been a pretty great customer of hers, too.
Dar, doing business in the night air under the bridge, reaches for his cell phone.
Fucking prick. Pecco, you sandbagging son of a bitch. This is the second time this week I cover for your ass.
Billy! That fucker didn't die, Billy. The fucker didn't die, Billy!
What the fuck are you talking about?
Says your sentence.
So what?
So this motherfucker.
Dar looks at his phone. Nick staggers backwards. A sedan pulls into Dar's outdoor office between burning braziers and the supporting foundation pillars of the large bridge next to the old hospital.
Well, what are we fucking up tonight, son?
What the fuck do you want now?
Look like you're in a fucking hurry. You know how much I gotta wipe your fucking nose? I gotta get some Fortune 500 faggot off my back by telling him he can fucking have you. You think I enjoy that? What you don't get is, I care about what happens to you because it can fucking hurt me. Now, do you need any more fucking instructions?
Bones drops to the floor like a sack of potatoes.
No thanks, dear. I'm taking the car.
Horn-rimmed glasses lie on the ground next to a shock of black hair. Nick looks at his .357, tucks it in his belt, collects the shotgun, stoops to pick up a bunch of keys from the floor, and leaves apartment 113. Dar scratches off in reverse in the sedan, leaving his father's prone body lifeless in the gravel. Nick drives from the tenement building in a red Ford Mustang. A dude leans against a white van outside a substantial old manorial building, trying in vain to light a cigarette. He gets in the van. Unseen, Nick is sitting at the wheel of the Mustang behind a perimeter fence, with his eyes fixed on him. The dude pushes in a cigarette lighter on the van's dashboard. Nick floors the accelerator. The Mustang burns rubber before rocketing through the fence and heading for a direct broadside with the van. The dude, reaching for his gun, clocks Nick too late. The van is split in two. The Mustang stops at the foot of the steps at the entrance to the building. Looking shell-shocked, Nick gets out of the steaming Mustang, shotgun at the ready, and lumbers up the steep steps two at a time. He enters through a modern glass door and climbs another short flight of stairs. The large, disheveled room in front of him has a flashing fluorescent light hanging by a thread at one end. Hearing noises off, he cocks his shotgun, exits through a door stage right, and hurries up several flights of stairs and arrives at a wooden landing. He enters a brightly lit room with a ceiling fan and is confronted by a dude with a sawn-off shotgun. Nick fires first. He blows off half the dude's leg. Another dude with a gun.
You fuck!
Nick reloads. Nick pounces. He's only winged the dude. He reloads again and stalks him along a corridor lined with shelves of chemical bottles and paraphernalia.
I'm gonna kill you, son of a bitch!
The dude turns and fires and retreats, trailing a leg on the floor. Nick returns fire and pursues the dude through the old hospital into a cavernous room where the gang cook their shit. The dude enters a side room. His magazine's empty. He jumps on a window ledge. Nick enters. He blasts him through the window and turns to leave. His exit is blocked. He grabs his semi-automatic. He makes a dash for it. He's reached a stairwell and heads upwards. Nick stops halfway up a flight of stairs. He's bought himself precious seconds to reload as two dudes reach the bottom of the stairs. With a swift movement, Nick points the shotgun over the banister at the men below. Nick heads higher up the stairs as outside Bones' sedan skids to a halt behind the red Mustang. Star gets out, wielding a handgun, gives the Mustang a cursory glance and runs into the building. Nick passes a sign at the top of the stairs that reads Ward 13 and handwritten in paint, Welcome to Hell. He enters a dimly lit room, crammed with old hospital equipment, and reloads the shotgun. This room leads to a second similar room. Nick familiarizes himself with the space. He can hear the two dudes at the top of the stairs.
Go that way, Barnes.
A black dude sends his mate one way and he goes another. It seems his mate was wounded by Nick's blast from the stairs. Nick moves through into another room as the black guy unknowingly follows in his footsteps. The white dude is circling round in the opposite direction, unwittingly in a classic pincer movement. Nick edges onwards, alert, twitchy. The black dude sweeps his gun round the second room Nick was in. The white guy is loitering.
You know it! Gonna die in here!
The black dude eases round a corner. Unseen, trapped somewhere between them, Nick pauses for thought. Downstairs, Dar walks the corridor lined with shelves of chemical bottles and paraphernalia. He comes to the mutilated corpse of the dude whose leg was blasted off by Nick. Unsurprisingly, this incenses Dar. Upstairs, the white dude, shuffling, pokes his head round a corner. Nick starts, edges forward again, as does the white dude. He clatters into a flashing fluorescent light, another one hanging by a thread at one end. Nick starts again. Unknown to each other, they're separated only by a length of wall. Nick treads on fallen masonry. Through an arch at the end of the wall, Nick sees the dude's shadow. He's seemingly aiming his shotgun at Nick through the wall. He ducks. The dude misses. Nick returns fire, apparently a bullseye. Dar is lurking. Nick discards his shotgun. Dar moves with more urgency. Nick checks the magazine on the Colt 45. He enters a large rose-tinted room and looks around, semi-automatic held in front of him. It's the derelict church hall where Dar had examined Nick's briefcase, evidently the old hospital chapel. He hears footsteps and turns. Under a crucifix, Dar enters behind him. He catches Nick. A shootout ensues in which they both take hits. The black dude enters behind Nick. He wings Nick below an ear. Nick turns and shoots him in the head and turns back to Dar. Clutching the left side of his neck, Nick slumps onto one of the remaining pews. His gun falls to the floor. Dar struggles to his feet. He shoots at Nick, but misses. He tries again, same result. Defeated, he sits beside Nick on the pew. Dar is struggling to speak. He looks at Nick, to his right, still clutching his blood-soaked neck.
Look at you. You look like one of us. Look what I made you.
Dar winces, puts his head back. Nick stirs. With his right hand, he lifts the Magnum revolver off the pew onto his left thigh, pointed at Dar. Slowly, they turn to look at each other, with perhaps a mutual respect and empathy in their eyes. Dar looks away. Tears are rolling down his cheeks. Nick staggers out of the old hospital under an overcast sky and feebly totters down the front steps. A black Ford Mustang drives past a police car, parked on the road outside Nick's house. The Mustang parks on the lawn by the front door. Nick lurches into the house and stops at the entrance to the drawing room. swaying and clutching his neck with his left hand. He breaks through the police tape as four more police cars arrive outside. Awkwardly, he flops onto a sofa. Detective Wallace, firearm drawn, creeps across the lawn. A home movie is running on the TV. Nick, drained, pale, motionless, running on empty, clutches his neck with one hand, the remote with the other.
Son, he started moving. I think he's going to pull through.
The faintest flicker of recognition crosses his face. There's a barely perceptible suggestion of a sigh. Grief, despair, and remorse seem to burn in eyes that stare from a gaunt, bruised, blood-stained face at the images of his former life played out on the screen in front of him. The end.
Your side, 'cause I